How are you doing, Michael?
Good. How are you, Donnie?
I am doing pretty well. I'm glad to hear you're doing good after your busy summer.
Yes, it's been quite big. You know what? The actual filming part was the quickest part of the whole thing. It's actually when it starts airing where it feels like, tedious work.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that. So I was really curious, how did you feel? I know you said, like, you know, filming it was actually the quickest part of all this, but how did you feel about your time on Bachelor in Paradise, whether that was being filmed, like actually being on the set, or afterwards?
I mean, honestly, for me, it was nice to just kind of get away from my day in and day out life. Filming is really brief. It's only about 3 weeks or so. So in comparison to what I did on The Bachelorette, this was a lot less of a time commitment. So it was a lot less of a burden on my family and, you know, babysitting, all of those things. You know, in terms of actually the format down there, it is like conflict is imminent. You can't avoid it whatsoever. People are constantly coming down. Relationships are being built and then tested. And you have to be very decisive at a very, you know, very quickly in the process. I think people that are not decisive get caught up in multiple relationships and, you know, run the risk of either being confused or hurting others.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that definitely seemed to be happened here, there, and again all over the show. So, I mean, that's kind of the way it's structured. So it makes it interesting, at least. You're not going to be bored with any sort of episode watching it, at least.
Yeah, I mean, where we filmed was in Sayulita, Mexico, and I'm not sure if you've ever been, but it's absolutely beautiful. The sunsets are second to none. But the living conditions there, it's wild. It's incredibly bohemian. There are no windows, no doors. There's bugs literally all over you. The waves are incredibly loud at nighttime, which is actually really calming. You know, I had like a 5-foot snake living above me in my bunk bed, and I was rooming with 8 other guys. And it was like eating all these bugs that were falling on me, and it was kind of crazy how fast I adapted to it. I actually kind of liked getting back to nature and not having all the distractions with your phone and, you know, all the things that, you know, we have on our to-do list on a regular basis as parents and professionals and, you know, people in our everyday lives.
Right. Yeah. There was one, scene after, you know, like after the sneak peek and everything. It was in the girls' dorm, but it was a giant spider, and I was like, I've never clicked away from something so fast in my life.
Yeah, we were under the, like, canopy in the jungle, so the types of bugs that are down there, it's like Jurassic Park. I mean, beetles, like, the size of potatoes. You had all of these, like, you had these monkeys that look like bears that would actually go into your suitcase and take things. So you always had to like zip your stuff up. There were crabs walking around in the bathroom and in the shower. I mean, you just, I don't know. There was this cool part where right when you're down there, it's unlike any hotel you've ever stayed at and an experience that, you know, very few could ever have. But then it was like, oh, we are very much living with these creatures as it is intended to be.
Right. Yeah, that is really interesting. They definitely gave the audience a little taste of that with some of the clips.
I bet there's so many crabs down there that they probably thought that we were invading, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That is very true. Once you're in nature, they're like, what the heck are these things? So I know you...
Yeah, they were kind of in their backyard.
Right. I know you mentioned you didn't have your phone, and I wasn't sure. I was pretty sure on The Bachelorette, they gave you some sort of, like, special permission, because I know on a lot of these shows, like, you're not allowed to have any contact with the outside world. So I didn't know if they gave you any special permission to speak to James, or if you had, like, scheduled kind of times of when you were able to, like, FaceTime him or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was the same treatment that I had gotten on The Bachelorette. You know, talking isn't always on a schedule because there's a lot going on and things that I need to be present for. So I could never pick an hour every single day where I'd be like, I'm going to call James at 4 o'clock. But it was usually about every other day where I could give him a quick FaceTime call. But it was, James is just in a totally different, era in his life right now. He, you know, he's 1 year older. This whole entire summer, he was, you know, it was 3 weeks. He went on 3 vacations with his grandparents who really valued their one-on-one time with him. And it was, he enjoyed it. You know, my grandparents enjoyed it. I was not always enjoying everything, but I'm glad I did it. It was funny, right before I left for the beach, I'm like, all right, James, I'm going to be gone, you know, for a couple weeks. And the thing is, you don't know how long you're going to be gone either. But I was like, you're going to be gone for a couple weeks. And he's like, where are you going? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to kind of on a work trip kind of deal, because it's a hard thing to explain, really.
Right.
And I actually prefer that he doesn't understand yet. And he was like, well, I'm going to have so much more fun than you are. Yeah, I was like, well, maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, I got it.
I'll hear notes when I get back.
Well, that's at least nice. He wasn't just sitting around. So is his grandparents, like your parents, that ended up taking care of him while you were gone?
My parents and Laura's parents. So I'm really close with Laura's family as well.
I see. Well, that's good. He wasn't bored by any means, it sounds like.
No. He was more than occupied.
I gotcha. So I know you said that, you know, coming out, once the show starts airing is where things kind of picked up for you. I mean, did you watch the show as it aired? Like, I was also curious about what was the kind of the best and worst parts of watching it kind of unfold.
I mean, I would say, you know, filming it is actually a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. You know, you're with a group of people that, you know, are at a certain stage in their life, and they all come from different walks of life. They're at this crossroad where they're ready to take a risk, you know, to find somebody to spend the rest of their life with. And it's interesting getting to know everybody's backstory and kind of sharing this campy experience with those people. So in so many ways, you're kind of like a family that's built around that, even when there is drama. But there always is tons of drama. And, you know, just watching this whole thing back, it was fun in the beginning. And then in the middle, it was a little bit exhausting. And then towards the end, I liked watching a lot of the moments that, you know, Danielle and I shared, and kind of tracking our progression. It's really cool that we can look back on this show now and say that those are like the first memories we ever created together.
Right. And they were documented, you know?
Yeah. Documented. Cause I mean, we always can recount, but we can't always relive.
Yeah, exactly. I see what you mean. I was curious because after The Bachelorette, I know you had an interview with my coworker Krista, and you on that, you know, with that interview, you said that you didn't have any plans to go on Bachelor in Paradise. So I was curious what kind of changed your mind on that.
I really, at the time when I did the interview, I was really getting ready to kind of walk away, just because there's a big mental toll that it takes on you. And again, the filming is what it is, but it's also, you know, public opinion and being caught up in your emotions and, you know, wondering what is real versus, you know, elements that feel manipulated. Mm-hmm. And so you're a bit confused. And so going in there, again, was just not appealing whatsoever. Then, you know, it came around, and I was actually a very late add-on. I think I got added on maybe 4 weeks before it filmed. So I was teetering back and forth all the way till the end. Because you're weighing things out. You're weighing, you know, can I do this again? Can I step away from my work and my personal life and my family? You know, you're always scared of getting a, you know, bad edit or being perceived poorly. And, you know, what that'll do to, you know, your reputation and things like that. But those are all secondary. And at the end of the day, I just decided if I didn't, it's always, let me phrase it this way. You know, I could list all the reasons why, you know, I didn't want to do it. But the thing that made me want to do it was I can't live my life with those what if moments.
Mm-hmm.
It's the what ifs, like not taking a chance on yourself, you know, being at a crossroad and being too scared to make a decision that could end in something life changing.
Right.
And so it's, you know, at this point in my life, I dedicate so much of myself to, you know, my work and also, you know, my family and all of that. It was just kind of a cool way to, you know, break out of my box and my shell. And, you know, I'm in hindsight, I'm so happy I did it. I've got Danielle now.
Right. Yeah. I did wonder, I mean, there is a lot of, I guess there's been a lot of, you know, the internet has its own gossiping about everything, and different circles. And one of the things that I saw was, and I don't know if you'd be able to even answer this, was that one of the things that you stipulated to go on the show was that Danielle had to be on it. So I didn't know if that was something that did happen or if that's just something someone made up. Because it seems so perfect.
Yeah, it wasn't a stipulation. It's not in the contract. I had the same exact questions given to me that everybody on the show has, which is the show is a matchmaking show. Like they want, the show only works if the people who are down there are also interested in the people who are down there. So they ask every contestant, you know, who are the people in Bachelor Nation that you would like to see on the beach? No one is ever told or, you know, nothing's confirmed that those people are going to be there across the board. And no one's, and it has to be that way because the whole point of the show, if you're watching it, is to capture real, authentic reaction.
Right.
So if people know that ahead of time, none of us are actors. Like, we're not trained in anything. It's not scripted on what we say when we're out there. So, I definitely asked for Danielle. That was the only one, that I had asked for, but until she came down, I had no idea she was coming.
Right. I gotcha. I see. I mean, like you said, this is kind of your second rodeo in the Bachelor kind of franchise. So, I also did want to know, is there anything, I guess, that surprised you this time around that maybe you were like, oh, this is different from the Bachelorette?
It's a lot more fun and, you know, a lot more lighthearted. You get to spend, and this is one of the reasons why I decided to go on Bachelor in Paradise, is the actual couple success rates are much higher on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And I know why. It's because you essentially go on a 3-week vacation with them and you spend every second with the person that you want to spend the time with. On The Bachelorette, you have to wait to, you know, get one-on-one time or group date setting. I think I spent more time with Danielle in maybe 1 or 2 days than I spent with Katie the entire season.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Yeah.
So the format is in your favor, and not just the format, but the environment where you are, you know, you're not distracted by the outside world. You're forced, not forced, but you're put into interviews to talk about your feelings, your emotions, what you want out of somebody, and like almost forced to like talk, like get to know somebody on a very intimate level that I think in the real world would take way longer.
Oh, I mean, really?
Where Danielle and I got in, you know, maybe 2.5 weeks. I think in the real world, it would have taken, I don't know, probably 5-6 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, everything's just kind of elevated.
I see. Yeah, I mean, it does make sense. It's not, you know, because there you don't have, it's not like you have a job that you're at for 8 or 9 hours a day and then you're, you know, doing all these other things just to kind of function. That's the whole point of being there. So I can definitely see that. I mean, speaking of Danielle, I didn't know if she's like, if there's a timeline for when she's gonna move here, or if she's moving to Akron or like any of the surrounding areas.
Yeah. I mean, I just spoke with her about this yesterday. You know, she's currently looking for jobs in, you know, Northeast Ohio. She's a nurse. She had 10 years of NICU nursing experience at the bedside. And like a lot of nurses, you get burned out. And so now she's really focused on, you know, aesthetic nursing, so injectables and Botox and things like that. So she's currently looking for, you know, a practice to join in Northeast Ohio. So if you know anybody, let me know. I want to make sure that she has a very like comfortable, transition. And we're also looking for, you know, a place for her to stay. We decided that, you know, she should have her own place, like her own space versus, you know, moving in with James and I. And we have a lot of reasons for that. We just want to march at our own drum now and, you know, not feel pressured to speed things up because maybe the public wants us to.
Right. I see what you mean. I gotcha. I mean, is there anything specific that you plan to show her about the area when she's here? I mean, I'm sure she's visited, but I didn't know.
Oh, I guess I forgot to tell you when she would be moving. We're shooting for around February.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. I see. Well,
just after the holidays and then January, really, you know, packing up and, you know, she's in Nashville right now, you know, kind of a goodbye tour. And then, you know, sometime in February, that's at least our target. Anything can change, but
right,
it's realistic.
Yeah, the holidays really, you don't want to be moving during all that.
yeah, and she's going to see Akron in February, which is like, welcome to your new life.
That's great. Lots of things, lots of, you know, we're small, we're not quite Nashville, but we have some charm.
Well, here's the thing. This is one of the reasons why I was attracted to Danielle. I mean, she's from Wisconsin. Mm. So she's a Midwesterner. Like, she gets this. She's at a point in her life where, you know, she doesn't need all of the things. She needs quality things.
Right.
And, you know, we had a lot of, like, very incredible, like, very in-depth conversations about what we want out of life. And at the end of the day, you know, after all of our conversations, she sent me a text and she just said, you know, I just want you.
Oh, I see. Well, that's very sweet. I mean, yeah, and especially to move and everything, but that is definitely if you're looking for that quality of someone who doesn't want, they don't need a whole bunch of little cheap things or whatever, that's not going to last. It's more about the quality than the quantity.
Yeah, she doesn't fit the typical mold of people that, I guess, you know, maybe like the stereotype of the kind of person that goes on the show.
I see. I gotcha. So I wasn't sure. I mean, how was her and James kind of first meeting, or have they met each other yet, or like how's that been?
It's been really amazing. you know, we got off the beach last week in June, and I think the first time we met up after the beach, we met at like a Airbnb in Kentucky because she was in Nashville and I'm up here, so it was like midway. It was in Bellevue, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that whole like 5-6 months where we can't be public, we always had to go to like these safe houses and just hunker down, and we couldn't go out, couldn't run errands. And you're living this weird life where you're keeping everybody secret. But during that first trip, I brought James down, and normally I wouldn't introduce anybody to my child that early. I mean, as a rule of thumb, it's probably like a year. But because I didn't want to be away from him while I was seeing her constantly, I think that sped up the process. Mm-hmm. And when they met, I mean, they immediately hit it off. She's amazing with kids. James was like, you know, he's sitting by her on the couch and laying on her. And, he said the cutest thing, last time she was here, we were dropping her off at the airport after she spent the weekend here. And right before we dropped her off, he's like, he's in the back seat of the car. He says, Danielle, do you want us to call you when you get in? Because so you know, you can hear our voice and you don't feel alone.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it's like they have a really good relationship, and she does an amazing job of, you know, engaging without overstepping. And I don't even know what overstepping would be, but it just comes natural to her.
Oh, I gotcha. I mean, it probably could be that NICU experience. I mean, you're dealing with kids for a decade, and especially they're probably at the worst moment of their lives, and their parents are too.
I mean, she's just very cognizant, and it's not as though if she were to overstep that, like, that would be a major issue, but she's really good at this balancing act that I'm not sure I would be good at. But we couldn't be happier right now. And James gets so excited when, you know, she comes into town and is happy that she's moving up here.
Oh, well, that's good. That's like the best you can hope for. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like, I always try to avoid projecting my own emotions on James, but I know this for sure. He knows that our family structure right now is not the same as his friends at school.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as though none of us are the same. There's no such thing as a traditional family. Love looks different for everybody. But he does feel that there is like that piece missing. He doesn't talk about it per se, but I can sense it. And so this will kind of be the first step in, you know, trying to get back to a place that feels more complete.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the goal. I mean, it seems like you're well on your way to making that happen. I also was curious.
Well, I mean, it's really just the start, too. And I think people that watch the show, there is always, because the show puts a timeline on things, and relationships should not have timelines. Mm-hmm. You know, just like, you know, love doesn't have, you know, rules to it. We're definitely taking our time, and every time we spend with each other, it gets progressively better. And I think, you know, some of the comments that I've seen on the internet were after I, you know, told Danielle that I loved her on the reunion, and that was the first time I've said it, actually the second woman I've ever said it to in my life. The comments on the internet were like, you know, she's going to move to Ohio and he hasn't even said I love you yet. you know, like, in my mind, I'm like, what? Like, what I think is being missed is, like, when I actually say it, I mean it.
Right.
You know, whereas sometimes it feels as though it's said without all that emotion behind it. Mm-hmm. And it's said for a television moment, and it's used as like this commodity, and it shouldn't be that way. It should be something you build up to, not something that, you know, is just dispersed to everybody. It's gotta be special, and words hold meaning. So, you know, I don't know. I'm on a rant now.
Oh no, that's okay. I mean, I totally get that. That was definitely something that I also saw perusing the Bachelor Nation forums, whatever, like just different social media things. But I mean, everything's different for every person. Like it's not standardized.
Without a doubt.
So that's
yeah. Everything's different. Like, and what I said isn't supposed to take away from other people that said I love you. Like, nobody understands how they're feeling or what's going in their head. My I love you isn't better than somebody else's, but it's just I take my time to process it, because when I do say it, I want it to feel real.
Right.
I don't want to feel pressured into it, because then moving forward, that word becomes less and less.
I gotcha. Yeah, it just depends on different people, and it's not like, I mean, they're not dating you, so why do they care? That's what I always think. I'm like, you're not dating, why do you care?
Everybody cares.
I know. That is the way of the internet, but I just...
Yes, I know.
I should know before I get... That's how it is. But I also did want to know, I mean, you know, with going on, like, Bachelor in Paradise and going back into this, I know you have, like, your L4 project and everything, and I think last time you said it kind of, you had people that were kind of taking over while you were gone. I'd assume that happened this time, but I wondered, like, how has that project been since you kind of began your whole journey with the Bachelor Nation franchise itself?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that, you know, I've got two other jobs. L4 is what I do, you know, at nighttime, and it's a passion project. So, you know, I don't have a salary, or we don't actually pay anybody. It's all really volunteer based. We've been able to see, you know, some growth. It's not as great as I would like, and I think that's somewhat typical of a, you know, memorial type project. Is in the beginning, when Laura passed away, you know, it grew rapidly because she was very fresh in a lot of people's minds, and it was a way for people to, you know, hold on to her. But as time goes on, I think that distance continually grows. And so we constantly have to make, you know, remind people and be proactive that, you know, the money raised on L4 is all of the profits of everything that's sold on L4 go up to Akron Community Foundation, the L4 Fund, which is, you know, a 501c3. And so it's everything that we raise gets distributed to cancer patients and groups that offer free cancer services to people during the hardest time in their life.
Well, I hopefully it keeps growing. I didn't know. I was just curious if, you know, any of your time on The Bachelor or Bachelor in Paradise had done anything to kind of help that. But it, like you said, it is kind of a memorial sort of project, so it's not directly, you know, tied. It's not the Date with Michael Alio project.
Yeah. I mean, our like local area, you know, in Northeast Ohio, Laura's story was just very, you know, it was shared, and she knew a lot of people locally, so there was a lot of support from that perspective. But on a national level, it wasn't as I had hoped. And, you know, we'll be starting a new year where we're trying to get some new initiatives out there in hopes of continually growing it and trying to distribute that money to these amazing 501c3s that, you know, support cancer patients.
Oh, I gotcha. I wasn't sure.
I've got to tell you about this too. Did you have another question on this?
I just had a question actually about there is a little birdie. It was your dad told me about an ointment that you patented, and I wanted to ask you about that. Oh, well, perfect.
You know, Laura was diagnosed in 2018, April 2018, and she had stage 2B triple negative and underwent very harsh chemotherapy. You know, there was Adriamycin, Cytoxan, Doxorubicin, Paclitaxel, Capecitabine, all of these chemotherapies. And we were getting treatment at the Cleveland Clinic, and there's a major side effect called hand-foot syndrome, and it's not the same kind that children get. But, you know, essentially it's a very, like, hard, very uncomfortable, burning rash that happens on your hands and your feet, and it's like a toxicity thing. Oh. And when Laura presented her with these symptoms to her doctor, they basically said there's nothing we can do. You know, you have cancer. We need to treat it with chemotherapy. You know, pick your poison.
Right.
And that was just kind of unacceptable for us because James was 7 months old, and he, you know, Laura couldn't pick him up or anything like that, and it was really hard to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we started saying, well, maybe we can do something about it. And Laura initially took, you know, the initiative. I should just say just took the initiative and, you know, started doing research, and we started bouncing ideas off each other, and we created a bunch of different formulations, tried them on her, and then settled on one that was completely novel, and it worked extremely well. And we didn't go into this like this is a business. It was like out of necessity.
Right.
But then, you know, we were very much just a part of the cancer community that people were, you know, we saw this side effect constantly being talked about. And then we're like, well, we created something that worked for Laura. Maybe it helps for you. Like, we'll send you out, you know, some samples. And we started sending them out to samples of patients with HFS. And we were seeing, like, really good results. And, you know, we didn't even think of it as a business until, or an opportunity to bring this thing to market until maybe it was about, you know, 2018. Did I say Laura was diagnosed in 2018? It's actually 2007.
Oh, okay.
Just in case. So it was 2018, and essentially, like, we're like, all right, well, let's start, like, formation. So we named the company St. James Therapeutics because James actually stopped taking breast milk from Laura's right side of, or left side of the breast,
mm-hmm.
and that's what triggered her to go to the OBGYN and get earlier detection.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we attribute James to so many ways, like locating Laura's cancer, because otherwise we wouldn't have done that. And so, you know, we started getting this on more and more people. Then, sadly, like, Laura passed in 2019. I kind of put this project on hold for, you know, 4 months or so, and then I just got, like, this surge of adrenaline, wrote a patent, filed the patent, and about 2 months ago, received approval for it. So it's been a lot of work in the process, and Gojo Industries, you know, during this whole process actually donated, you know, 4 or 5 of their experts to help us, like, develop, formulate all of these things, like regulatory pathways to market, all pro bono. It was all passion project for them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so in a lot of ways, it's Laura's, you know, brainchild and legacy, and, you know, I'm just kind of trying to pull it through.
That's great. I mean, I'm sure that'll help, like, you know, if all goes well and it comes out, I mean, it seems like it could help quite a few people, because it is kind of, you know, like you said, pick your poison, but to, you don't want to have to, I'm sure there's so many other things with cancer and going through that treatment that you just get the answer, pick your poison to lessen one of them, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of, and this is pretty much like across the board. Any doctor we talk to says the same thing. There's a ton of money being poured into cancer research, which is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But there's not a lot of companies or products that are focused on cancer support. So trying to ease that journey. And the reason why we're so passionate about it is because when someone is diagnosed with cancer, they are poked, they are prodded, their hair falls out, they become a patient. They're constantly sad because they have a lot to be sad about. They no longer feel like themselves and they lose their identity. So if we can create very niche products that address these concerns, it can help people feel like themselves again. And if we can alleviate some of these symptoms, you know, and help them during this really hard time in their life, then that's what we'll try to do.
Well, that sounds great. Hopefully it all goes through and maybe there's, you know, there could be more things in the future. Like you said, if it's seems like a pretty, like an industry, I guess, where there's not a lot of, I guess you could say competition.
Yes.
Right. I really appreciate you taking the time with all that to talk to us. We really appreciate it. Especially after watching the entire show and everything, I'm like, wow, he's a real person. He's right here.
Yeah. And you know, Danielle works too. A lot of times people take on this influencer life and, you know, we do some of that as kind of like a side hustle, but we have like our own passion projects, like things that we want to do and, you know, not just go to these events, but really enjoying settling into normal life. And, you know, it's the mundane stuff that we kind of enjoy in doing all of that. It's really interesting too. So if you watch the reunion, Danielle, we were getting ready to go and she's like, yeah, I'm going to let everybody know I'm moving to Ohio. And I was like, Danielle, you got to say moving to Akron. I was like, Akron people need some credit. You know, the city needs some love. There's amazing people here and we don't get enough shout outs. So I was like, say you're going to Akron. She's like, all right. I was like, Akron people will love you for it. Trust me.
They will. They truly appreciate it. Because everyone, yeah, I went to school in Cincinnati, and they're like, where are you from? And I'm like, Akron. And they're like, where's that? And I'm like, Cleveland. I'm from Cleveland.
Yeah, well, you go to Cleveland, and you're like, you're from Akron. They're like, is that east side or west side?
Right, exactly.
You're like, look at a map.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Well, it was really great talking to you, Michael. I really appreciate you taking the time to kind of talk to me about all this, that, and the other thing, all your hats.
All right, thank you.